Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Rube Goldberg Brewing Machine. Not exactly a household name in all parts of Australia, but these are the interviews that I love. I know as little as most of you listening to about this place, but what I do know is that beer nerds are going to love this one because the Rube Goldberg Brewing Machine is bloody unique. My old mate John Burridge from Cry Malt alerted me to Billy and Anna's story. His words were there, the name alone is a story in itself. So diving a little bit deeper, and this brewery idea conceived on a cycling trip that saw Billy and Anna travel from Alaska down the west coast of the USA into Mexico and finishing in Costa Rica by way of about 150 brewery stops, I believe. A brewery with a keen eye on sustainability and one that is anything but run-of-the-mill. So what are we bloody waiting for? Let's get into this. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. Rube Goldberg Brew Machine co-founders Billy Barniston and Anna Southers.
Hey y'all.
Hey y'all.
Thank you for jumping on. As I said off the mic, I'm really looking forward to this one because seriously, there's not a hell of a lot of information about you guys out there. So in my...
We're Tarawana's secret spot and no one's heard of Tarawana.
Yeah. Oh, I had to look that one up too. I've had to look up so many things, so many Googles in this last week or so. But look... There is just so much to talk about with this chat. Obviously, the unique name is an obvious one because I asked people in my office today about whether they knew what a Rube Goldberg machine was, and it was a bit half and half. But
science teachers.
Yeah, primary school kids know it.
Okay.
They do look at their parents.
Well, we'll get onto that in a minute because what I really want to talk about to start with, because I'm an avid traveller, my wife and I and the kids, we love to travel. So we're really missing the planes, the trains, the automobiles and the breweries that I sneak the family into when we're in other countries. So I don't care about the listener right now. This is for me, right? I want to know, let's start with the amazing bike trip that you went on prior to starting to the brewery. So take me back to 2014 when you were – young and sprightly. And what was going on there?
2014.
That's so long ago now.
Yeah.
I did check out your blog on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well done.
It wasn't a blog. It was just little, where are we for the parents?
Yeah, it saved us all the emails.
Ah, fair enough. Ah, method in your madness. I like it. So tell me, what were you guys doing work-wise back in 2014?
Well, I was brewing. I was a commercial brewer and...
I was a physio.
Physio. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Naturally, they seem to go together to want to start a brew, but that's
absolutely good.
It's easier to teach Anna to brew than it was to teach me how to physio. So.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough, yeah. So, Billy, whereabouts were you actually brewing at the time?
I brewed up in Sydney at Brewpack. It's now called Tribe and they've moved down to Goulburn. It's just a large commercial contract brewing.
Yep.
Company. So we brewed on bulk a lot of smaller breweries beers for like distribution to say Woolworths or all the different pubs around the place, that kind of thing.
And Anna, did you like have your own physio practice or something like that, or were you working in hospitals?
No. So 2014 working sports physio practice in Wollongong.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah.
How did the whole idea about the trip come about to grab a couple of bicycles and piss off for however long you were away for?
Oh, it was a year all up.
Oh, wow.
I'd had it in the back of my mind to do it as a trip for quite a few years, but didn't really have the time, money, or anyone to do it with. And then Anna was actually my neighbour. She moved in. And before we even got together, we proposed this trip and we'd locked it in.
I said, hell yeah, that's a great idea.
So hold on, stop there for a minute. Which of the two of you fell for the other one first and had that in the back of their mind that I want to, either in moving in or asking to go on a trip, somebody had ulterior motives. Which one of you was it?
It was definitely me. I felt Anna straight away. It was about 3 months before I wore her down.
And I bet you thought she's going to have no idea if I ask her to move in and then if I ask her to go on a bike trip, she'll just think I want to be a friend.
Clear
agenda.
There was definitely a clear agenda. Anna was very aware of the gender. She was just in denial.
Anna, you're sipping on a beer right now, but were you a beer drinker back then, 7 years ago?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. Not as many. It took me the West Coast of the States to that's not true. Not as varied, definitely as many.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I drink a lot now that I run a brewery, I must say.
Fair enough. No, that's okay.
Yeah, it took me a bit to get into the West Coast IPAs and that sort of stuff on the trip, but I love my hops now, so.
Oh, I liked it.
No, I started drinking beer at uni.
At uni. 2 years
old.
Yeah, okay. And I'm tipping, Billy, yours started around that time too, or maybe earlier perhaps with a homebrew or?
Yeah, so at uni, my best mate and I, we quite enjoyed the effects of alcohol. Drinking it was what we needed to do in order to feel the effects. But
what were the effects for you, just being an awesome dancer and a killer with the ladies?
Yeah, pretty much standard.
No, Susanna.
I've seen him dance. I won't see to the ladies.
So, yeah, we were just, we wanted to sort of remain drunk through uni basically. So we didn't have enough money to do so. So we taught ourselves to brew. It tasted okay for what we were, expecting, I guess, but they definitely all exploded for the first few years.
Yeah.
So we've come a long way since then.
Quite a common theme. So you obviously followed your heart and went with brewing. Your mate that you started brewing with, what did he do? Did he become a brewer too?
No, he's a school teacher, and I didn't start brewing until much, much later in life.
Sucks to be him then.
Home brewing for about 20 years before I moved over to commercial brewing.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Sorry to interrupt. Just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer interviews, scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one. And then also find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. All right, tell us about this trip. So you flew out of Australia. Where did you land and what was your plan?
Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah, buy a bike and head south.
Yeah.
Okay.
We looked up and we bought all the stuff at REI. So
yeah,
we just got all the camping gear and the bikes and the Ortliebs and strapped them on.
The Ortliebs?
Ortliebs, the
saddlebags.
Saddlebags, yeah.
Ah, right, okay. All right. Well, you're just saying that, I'm madly Googling just to see exactly where Anchorage is because I'm not great with
Anchorage is the capital.
That's not.
No, it's not. What's the capital?
I know you're leading me astray. What are you bloody doing?
So Anchorage is the largest city in Alaska.
It's friggin' long way from getting to the States, say, for Seattle. That's a big distance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we actually went north first. We didn't hit – well, we kind of
– we did a loop there.
We did – we spent about 2 weeks just sort of looping around southern Alaska, and then we went up into the interior, into Fairbanks, and then – if you're heading north, we hooked a right into the Yukon, into Canada.
Oh, yeah,
and
nice.
Then from there we went down back into Alaska and along through Juneau and then caught the ferry across to Canadian mainland.
Yep.
And then went down there, hopped over to Vancouver Island.
Yeah, yep. Can't miss that for the breweries.
And then back into the mainland, crossed into the US and then just very much hugged the coastline down into Mexico and then went along to Baja. Then from the Baja, caught a ferry across to the mainland, and then just same deal, kept hugging the coast. We went inland at Guatemala and Honduras, and then hit the coast again in El Salvador, and then Costa Rica and Nicaragua. And it actually got too hot for us. We're getting some pretty bad heat stroke.
Okay, get up in the dark, cycle for a few hours, get heat stroke, recover, and go again. So
we ended up knocking it on the head after about 3 days of heat stroke and then went straight back up to El Sal. And then for the last 3 months, we just hit a point break and surfed.
Oh, nice. As the crow flies, I just did a quick measure on Google Maps. That's about 8,000 kilometres. So God knows how many you actually did travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did it very slowly.
10,000, I think.
Yeah, 9 or 10 according to the little speedo thing on the bike.
Yeah, radio. Oh, wow.
You've got to burn off your beer calories, you know?
Yeah, true. We'll get to the brews in a second. I just want to try and relate with you because I've done the drive down the West Coast from San Fran through to LA through some of those great
– Oh, it's so nice, isn't it?
It's just amazing. I just love it.
So good. Really good people, really good scenery, some pretty awesome breweries and beers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So where was the first brewery you knocked on the door and said, we want to try beer? Was it up there in Anchorage or was it, you have to travel?
There's at that time, there's probably about five or six.
Yeah, I think so. That was the first reindeer on a pizza. I remember that one.
We had reindeer pizza and icebox, one of the first places we went to.
With an icebox. So what percentage was the icebox? Because I've had an icebox down here in Hobart, which is around about 18, I think, from memory.
Mm, it's probably around that.
Yeah.
It was high teens.
Yeah, nice. What a great beer and food match, I reckon.
Oh. Yeah, well, you know, we had never had either before, so that was that marriage, I guess.
Would you recommend reindeer on a pizza to anybody moving forward?
We're both plant-based now, so probably not.
Okay. Yeah, well, I guess not. Is there like, you know how you get bacon and things like that with plant-based? Is there a plant-based reindeer product?
I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
Maybe that's something I need to research. Well, there you go.
Deacon.
So you had 150 or thereabouts breweries on your way through.
Yep. 150 on the knocker, actually.
Oh, was it? Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I've done a few myself over there. Like they're amazing. Every time you go to these places, there's something different about each of them. It's like trying to pick your favorite child. You know, there's 150. Mm. Were there a bunch of standouts? Was there one that you just like, you know, held up on a pedestal, or was it all?
How much of it is context?
Yes, yeah. You just beat me to that. I was going to say, is it about the context of who you're with, what you're doing, the weather, the beer?
Yeah.
Yep. So 49th State was the first one that really we clung to passionately. It was the brewery just up the road from the Denali National Park, where the biggest, tallest mountain in North America, Denali, or Mount McKinley, it's often called. Yeah, so we had plans to go in there and went in there and camped a couple of days, but there was such extreme raining and flooding that we had to be evacuated.
Wettest June on record.
Seriously?
Yeah.
The tent
was like a waterbed.
Yeah, it felt like a waterbed.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we got evacuated out of there, and then that was the first brewery that we came across. It wasn't even that far away,
actually. Yeah, it's really close.
Denali is Alaska, isn't it? That's right.
Yeah, really big national park where you see all the bears and the moose and the rest of it.
Nice. So at 49th, wasn't the beer with the reindeer, was it, with the icebox?
No.
Those jalapeno poppers.
Jalapeno poppers. Oh, my God. Just a tasty sensation.
I just remember the beer.
Well, that's okay because you're here together, so I'm getting the best from the left and the best from the right.
There you go. But, as Anna was saying, it was the first hot shower in a while. They had a big fireplace. There was heaps of people. Thing. Yeah, heaps of people, which we hadn't seen either. So the beer naturally tasted amazing because we were just in an amazing mood. So that was the pick for Alaska.
Was that the stout?
There was like a barrel aged stout on nitro.
Oh, hello!
And always tastes good when it's like really cold and wet.
And they had stainless steel growlers as well, which is our first introduction to that, I think.
Were they counter pressure filled?
No, not there.
No, okay. That's all right. Well, they're only half as good as you guys.
Actually, the head brewer wouldn't allow us to put that beer we wanted in the growler because it was on nitro, and we fully respected his decision. another little tick in the box for those guys.
Fair enough. So, you know, that was one of the early on breweries. Like, as you worked your way through, did you sort of forget where you'd actually been, or was there like highlights in each state or something like that?
There's some good ones.
There's definitely lots of highlights. The Four Winds is probably.
Four Winds in Vancouver was really good.
Four Winds in British Columbia, Vancouver. It's actually won a lot of awards now. But when we went there, one of my friends that I met traveling in South America probably 10 years before, he actually worked there. And so we hadn't heard about it, and it wasn't on our path. It was in an industrial area, but he was like, try some of these beers. They're amazing. They had a Juxtapose IPA, which was
the Brett IPA.
Brett IPA. It's the only Brett beer I've ever liked, and it was still one of the best beers I've ever had.
So but you kind of knew them before they were famous, is what you're trying to say to me.
Yeah,
very much. Very much. Yeah.
What about down in California, where there's so many breweries that people would know the names of? Was it, were they like too well known for you? You would want to try and pick off some of the lesser knowns as your favorite?
Whatever we could do on the bike trail, really. You know,
whatever was convenient.
So, I mean, you pull into a city and we do like four or five breweries in a day sometimes. Bend in Oregon was amazing for that.
Oh, yeah. I've actually said to my wife, that's where I would love to go at some stage. She's like, why? I was like, come on. It's like just about beer mecca pretty much.
Oh, it's everything mecca. Bend's one of the –
Does she like rock climbing or something like that as well?
Have a look at me. I've just been saying to your husband I'm on the man shakes because I'm getting fat. Do you think I'm a rock climber?
You're right. <lying. laughs>
Look at this. Look at this.
Oh, no.
No, we are not rock climbers, but we do enjoy good food and beer.
Well, Ben's a good place to go. Seattle, Portland, they're all very good beer makers. In California, we did go to
Flystone Walker.
Yeah, went to Flystone Walker, went to Heretic.
Their beer tasted better in the middle of Passaggshack in Alaska, though, because, you know, there was nothing else around. It was the best thing I'd ever had. Yeah. The brewery's still good, but the context.
Yeah.
And what, as you sort of went down the coast and went into Mexico and South America and stuff, were you still finding cool little craft breweries, or did the breweries change as you sort of went south of the border?
Certainly not as many, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was quite a few craft beer bars, and so that tended to be where we'd end up. There were a couple of breweries, but they were very much like just starting out and only had sort of fairly bland products.
Great difficulty getting the ingredients along as well.
Yeah, it was really hard for them to get sort of stuff. Fresh ingredients.
Yep. And is Baja as cool as it sounds?
It's the best. It's probably my favorite place that we went.
Is it? But
yeah.
Because it's called Baja California, but it's not actually in America, is it? It is south of the border. Or is it
It's that really long peninsula. I think it goes from like Brisbane down to Melbourne in terms of length.
Oh, that's how long it is it? Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
It's surprisingly long. And
filled with the most amazing cacti.
Yeah.
Ah, nice. It's
like, yeah, it was very similar to Alaska, but instead of like all trees, it was like cacti and desert and rocks. But in terms of its like vastness and impressiveness and just immense size, it was,
nice.
But just not wet. It was really dry.
Was it safe or were you a bit scared?
Baja was pretty good.
Yeah. Baja, we were told Baja was pretty much the only safe place
in
Mexico.
So we still free camped all the way through the Baja.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Whereas Mexico and mainland.
Yeah, mainland's where we started, you know.
Staying in the little hotels.
Rather than sleeping on the side of the road.
Yeah, fair enough. You might have never woken up if you've been sleeping on the side of the road down in Mexico, perhaps.
In some of the places, for sure.
Yeah.
And whereabouts along this trip did your little mate, the hot-bearded dude, actually get drawn?
Ah, that was our final resting place in El Tunco in El Salvador.
And who drew it?
Me.
Oh, you drew it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What was the inspiration? Was it the beard on Billy's face there that maybe was the start of it?
Oh, you should have seen it when I was in Alaska, mate.
It was
ginormous.
Yeah.
We like combed it all out and made it hipster for Portland when we got there, but it was a big bushman at that point.
Yeah, it was bushier than my current pandemic hairdo.
Yeah, which is, honest, I'm sorry, mate, it's pretty ordinary, but we'll move on.
Thank you. The design.
We like hops and we like pirates, and so we made a pirate with a beard made out of hops and put the barley stalks in behind it instead of the bones. And Rube was born.
Rube. I had nothing to do with it. It was definitely all Anna.
Okay.
I just frothed at it once it was done.
Had you been an artist in a previous life? Because it's pretty, or was what I've seen on your website, is that the original sketch, or has someone else redrawn that, or that's all your work?
No, that's the original sketch.
That's awesome.
He's very artistic.
Okay.
She's done all our branding, all the sub-branding and all that kind of stuff as well, all the poster design.
I love it.
Yep.
So I'm all right on paper, but you get me in the graphic design stuff on the computer, that's a lot trickier.
Yeah. She's old school, is what she's trying to say.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm a bit of a fan of old school too. I can't really draw on the track, well, you know, on the pads and all that sort of thing in the way the artists do it these days with their bloody plastic pencils and all of that. It just doesn't seem to work for me. I like the feel of the old, you know, the charcoal or the pencil on the paper and that sort of thing for me. Not that I have got anywhere near the skills of what I've seen with you with those drawings, because they are pretty awesome, I reckon. So
thanks.
When did you feel like it was time to come home? Was there always like a time you were going to put on this thing? It was going to be, you know, one full year, or did you get to El Salvador and just look at each other and say, I'm fucking sick of you?
Nah, not even.
Not yet.
Not even. No, it was always.
I love you.
This is the best. This level will never work again.
You don't want to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was always going to be 12 months.
We were ready to come home.
There was a 12-month return ticket purchased from the start. We were pretty much ready to come home. Like, we'd been sedentary and surfing for the last 3 months. We were mentally prepared, financially drained. So we'll just, everything was pointing towards leaving at the right time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Had to come back and start a brewery, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Many years later.
One last question about the travel and then we'll move on. After what beer at what brewery did Billy tell Anna that he loved her?
Oh, that was before we left.
That was before we left.
Oh, geez, you went early. Wow. Oh, yeah. Peaked early. Yeah.
Well, your listeners can't see, but you can. As if you'd wait around for that.
Hey, look at her go. Hey, well done. You are batting above your average, I've got to say.
There you go.
No, well done. That's fantastic. Mate, if you know, you know, I reckon. That's great. That's great. So what did you come home with? Did you come home with like a concept, a plan, something scrawled on the back of a napkin, or just an idea about the brew? What did you have?
We have a very interesting notebook that we wrote down all our interesting ideas, good and bad, funny and otherwise. It was kind of like our reference guide.
You get a lot of time to think things through down to the final sort of valve when you're on a bike with not much else going on. So, yeah, I mean, you spend a lot of time designing a brewery in your head, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on paper.
Have you still got that book? Is it like Pride of Place in the Brewery or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's the bottom drawer in our kitchen, actually.
Yeah, just where it should be, just Pride of Place there. So you came back. Was it always going to be Wollongong or north of Wollongong where you are? Was that the plan?
Yeah, well, we weren't quite sure. It was definitely going to be in the Illawarra somewhere. We wanted it somewhere that was reasonably close to where we live. The original plan was actually for us and one of our friends to start one up. And we did a couple of site visits and we got fairly involved getting like solicitors and town planners involved and all that kind of stuff. But we were jerked around a number of times. So we kind of stopped searching and looking,
pushing as hard.
Yeah. And then eventually our friend pulled out. So we sort of changed the business model to better suit just Anna and I.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it was actually Anna's boss was looking she was looking to expand her physio practice and found our current venue, thought that it would be
She was looking for a Pilates studio. She's like, this isn't going to work for me, but it might work for you. So we went and checked it out. We're like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So we started negotiating the lease and hit up council and spoke to a manufacturer for the equipment and got the ball rolling.
And what was the vibe of the venue when you went and saw it? Was it a big, you know, tin shed sort of thing?
Big empty warehouse. Yeah. It used to be an old bakery. So it had plenty of power, plenty of space, literally just like a big triangle with concrete floor and three car spaces out the front. So we turned the car spaces into a beer garden and the warehouse into a brewery.
Happy days. All right, let's talk about the name, the Rube Goldberg Brewing Machine. As I said, there'll be many people listening to this thing that have got no fucking idea what a Rube Goldberg machine is, who he was. They've probably never seen the OK Go film clip about it, which is an absolute ripper. I'll put a link to that in the show notes because that is awesome. That's how one of the people in my office explained it to me today. That they said, "Have you seen the OK Go film clip?" I was like, "Yeah, but I didn't know what that was originally. But now it's all come clear." So, tell us about it.
It's been a while since we've had to tell this story.
We've been closed for a while.
Yeah, true. So I guess the original idea came up, being an avid home brewer and a tight ass, I would never buy the equipment. I'd just fashion it out of whatever I had lying around or, you know, build it just somehow.
Jimmy something up that would do the task, you know.
Yeah, Aussie thing.
Yeah, so you'd end up with this weird Frankenstein contraption that was massively overcomplicated because the more you got into it, the more complicated you just wanted to make it. It was just like the natural progression to the point where I actually prefer the process more than the product. So, but it was just, I guess, like an homage to all the homebrewers out there because that was going to be our focus at the start. Just sort of, you know, small boutique.
Very manual as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rube Goldberg machines are all about forced transition and we wanted that. Billy brewed on such a big system in the commercial arena that he just wanted that, you know, be able to smell and see the beer and have control over it. And, you know, when you turn a valve, you're the one doing it rather than it being all automated. Yeah. So that's sort of where we started, was this really manual little system with all little
unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah, so that's the crux of it, is that the machines do a lot of shit to perform a simple task, basically.
Yeah.
It's probably the exact opposite of where you had, you know, brewed previously at BrewPack. You know,
mate, you want complicated. That's that place.
I was thinking because they're like a big contract brewing thing. You're trying to do this small bespoke kind of setup that is the opposite.
Yeah. So it's just we're actually a very small, simple operation. It's just the brew machine itself that we try and keep visually complicated.
Visually complicated.
As a small business operator, complicated is not your friend.
No.
In any regard. So we keep it visually complicated. So for example, we're a 500 liter system, but we've got four vessels rather than a two vessel. Everything's gravity fed. We have to build the brewery. It takes about an hour and a half to actually plumb up and link and build all the brewery because they're all standalone vessels.
In my head, I've got, you know, remember back in the day when you used to see the homebrew kits, and they'd be like on steps, 1, 2, and 3, and it'd gravity feed from one, then it'd be a bit lower the next one. Imagining that in my head, that's what your thing is.
Yeah,
there's some elements of that.
Not far off.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's what, every time you pack it up and you put it back together and pack it down and...
Yeah, well, it's, the vessels obviously stay in place. So it's just all the valves, connections, the hoses, pumps, grants, spar jam, all that kind of stuff, so... Yeah, it's I like it. I like a much more engaging brew. You're more in touch with the product. You get a better sense of what's going on. You're not waiting for alarms or timers and stuff to go off, like Anna said. So it's just more engaging. And at that stage, it was just Anna and myself. So it was a really, really neat sort of system to learn on as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just because each vessel had its own singular purpose. And as soon as you move the product along to the next vessel, you can clean the previous one. So by the end of the brew day, you've only got one vessel to clean.
Yeah, so that's why we thought we'd do like back-to-back brews.
Thought we'd be cool and do back-to-back brews. But, being as small as we are, max capacity is two brews a week. So doing back-to-back's a really long, drawn-out process.
What's an average brew day for you, 8 hours?
Set up and pack down, full cleaning and out the door. 8 would be the maximum.
Okay, and that's the two of you going at it the whole time?
Oh, no, we don't brew anymore.
I've got people for that now.
Yeah. We let the kids do that. We call our brewers the kids. The kids have got it.
They're exceptional. They're very good.
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah, actually, we poached one of the brewers from BrewPack. He's down there brewing for us now. He's awesome, Nick. And our other brewer, Tash, she used to work at Bent Spoke front of house.
Nice.
She's doing uni down there and she's now up with us. She started off as just a beer server and now she's doing none of the hospitality. She's just a hardcore brewer. She's got a general certificate in brewing and
loving it.
Yeah.
Cool. So what do you guys do? Are you like running the actual brew pub venue or?
All the other things.
Everything else, mate. Everything else.
The non-fun operations
officer, safety manager, licensee, growler cleaner and filler.
Yeah,
your packing line.
Packing line.
I'm HR, marketing, venue manager, all that stuff.
Toilet unblocker. I forget who it was. It might have, I can't remember who told me that they were everything in the toilet unblocker was their role.
Yeah.
Might have been DJ from Mountain Culture, actually.
That would have been us at the start for sure. Yeah. But, I jokingly say I do everything I can't afford to pay someone else to do, which is still, you know, about 60 hours worth of stuff a week.
Yep.
But we're getting there.
Yeah. So in terms of your size, you are quite small, because if my stupid maths, my simple maths is right, it's 50,000 litres a year if you said you do two brews a week. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it would be in a perfect world, but we don't have same size fermenters. We have different size ones. So we've got
– just because you want to make it a little bit more complex for yourself?
Well, we figured we're
smart, the small batch stuff.
Yeah, we figured there'd be more popular beers and less popular beers and that kind of thing. So we wanted just the versatility of having different size fermenters. So 48, we worked out initially for our excise. If we're brewing at max capacity, 48,000 litres is what I worked out to be roughly our yearly total.
Yep. And that, ladies and gentlemen listening, is why if you're not in the absolute vicinity of the brewery, you're never going to try this beer, basically.
Yeah. We are the best beer you've never heard of.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually, I love it. You say it on your website, I've heard other people say it before, that, you know, beer's best drunk in the shadow of the brewery, that kind of thing. So, I mean, if that's what you're aiming for, you know, all power to you. I like it. And I just like the fact that
you have a hyper-local focus.
Yeah, very much so.
Hyper-local. It's nice. Are you, you know, really active in the community and all that sort of thing is in the summer? I know you have this relationship with the – is it with the restaurants, and you share food and drinks sort of
venue to venue? Yeah. So Tarawana, our suburb, there's 8 retail places there, and most of those are all like food – places, and we're kind of sandwiched right in the middle. So we're BYO food, which means we don't have to deal with a chef or a kitchen or any of that junk. And we let all the people next to us do all that stuff, and we just provide the venue and the beer.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, we love that sort of setup when we're traveling, that sort of picnicky vibe you get with, you know, there's the hot dog place next door, so you go around there and you get your hot dogs and you bring it back. And a lot of the places over there had the food trucks, obviously, as well. But it just had a really different vibe about it, which we really liked.
Yeah, the BYO food was really, really resonated with us.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I think it's really cool. Now, tell us about the beers that you're brewing, because there's fairly high sort of turnover in, as you're saying, like what is on and what's not on. And I think every third post on your Facebook page is a new list of beers and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, well, the joys of being small and having an excellent head brewer.
Small and nimble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a good pool of recipes that we sort of keep bringing back, the good ones, but it just gives you that versatility to play. That's what the small vessels are there for as well, especially if there's some sort of new exciting hop coming along and we can just, you know, you don't have to make a big batch of it. We can just make a little one and see how it tastes, see how it goes.
Obviously, you know, when you're a small business, money is tight. But one of the things I love that I read today is that you've actually invested in something that a lot of new breweries don't, and that is a lab to make sure that you've got, you know, good quality, consistent beer, and you understand what's right and wrong. The whole quality control thing, that's often an afterthought for breweries.
Here's where opinionated Billy's going to come out.
Yeah. Have you met Amy Returned to Billy?
Coming from our commercial backgrounds, there was quite a large and very awesome micro lab, and we had two dedicated microbiologists and quality control people. But as brewers, we were in charge of doing a lot of analysis and control and just checking every step, every critical control point along the way of the brewing process. And being a contract brewer, you had to brew your beers within very strict parameters so that they would pass the taste test at the end of the process for the person you're brewing for. So it was kind of ingrained for my entire brewing experience, and same for our head brewer. So that was always going to be the case, having the lab, because I actually didn't know anything otherwise.
Okay, yeah.
I think a lot of brewers who don't have a lab, it's probably because they were home brewers who just made the leap and they don't actually have any sort of exterior commercial brewing experience.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that, in my opinion, would be a big reason why some breweries don't. But yeah, you've got to know what's going on. You can't just rely on your brewer's ears and eyes.
Yeah, I just like the fact that you've invested in what I consider to be a really important part of long-term success of the brewery. I think it's really, really bloody smart. Another thing I love about what you've done is how you've invested in counter pressure fillers for your growlers. That could have been it's another quality control measure, and you could have done it like every other brew pub around the place, which has got the long hose going into the bottom of the growler and filling from the tap. But you obviously wanted to do that.
No, it's a dreadful idea.
Oh my god!
Explain your reasoning.
Well, it's really shit for the product. I mean, no one wants oxidized flat beer that they've just paid for.
Yes,
that they have to drink within like 24 hours, and the amount of wastage that you get. When you're only brewing like 250 litres of something, you really don't want 30 or 40% of that going down the drain.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We can't afford the wastage.
Yeah. I think I worked it out a couple of weeks ago. I think I growled like nearly 200 litres of beer and I had 6 litres of wastage.
Oh, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's better wastage than our bar. We work off 10% for our bar, but we're actually closer to about 6.
You're the numbers man then too, aren't you?
He's the numbers man.
I like it. I like it. Hey, I saw a photo on your Facebook, I think it was. You had people's names written on the fermenters. What's that all about?
Oh, yeah. So who have we got? We've got Charlotte. She was the original. And Simone. So named for Charlotte Kaslick and Simone Biles. We named our first fermenters during the last Olympics, not the ones just gone.
Yep.
Where they both got golds and did incredibly well.
Yeah.
And we've got Steph Gilmore and Serena, and we've got Isabel Kelly and Elise Perry. So they're all named after female sports stars.
Yeah, female athletes that inspire.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Basically, just done women. They're going to, you know, make good beer, aren't they?
Women in sport. That's our thing.
I like that. I like this. That's actually really cool. I've never come across anybody. I don't think I've ever come across anybody who's actually named their fermenters, but let alone sort of had some really nice thought behind it.
People do.
Do they? I've never seen it.
Ever since the Rio Olympics, all of my fermenters have been called Charlotte. And then I had multiple, so I had to come up with other names. But yeah. I say I'm a female athlete fan. I'm actually a Charlotte Kaslick fan. But
okay. Anyway. Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
If you're listening.
Everybody's got their own thing. Of course she is. Of course she is.
Yes, no doubt.
I'm getting the theme that you guys are very passionate about what you do, and you pick certain passions and you're fucking wrong with them.
And everything else can get stuck.
Exactly. On a serious note, I mean, something else that you're really strong on is sustainability, looking after our environment. And it's not just lip service. It's not just about separating your recyclable rubbish and things like that. You guys really are next level in what you do. And what I read today, I didn't quite understand. So I was hoping you might be able to really dumb it down for me and talk about some of the efforts you go to in terms of sustainability in the brewery.
Well, which bit did you not understand?
The whole bit about reusing the water. I've read something about water being used 15 times or something. I'm a bit lost.
You're like, that's gross.
Yeah, that's what I actually thought. I was like, and what? Reuse the water and then you brew with that.
So we have a little funnel underneath the drip tray. And one of the things that really broke my heart working up in Sydney at a big brewery was the amount of water that was wasted.
Yeah.
And we would back-to-back brew. So, you know, all the cooling water that was heated to, you know, in the heat exchange, we would then use for the subsequent brews. But we'd have like 30-minute hot rinses where there's 2,000 litres of water going down the drain. If I'm in the cellar, I'd do that probably 3 times a shift. You'd have 9 guys on shift, 3 shifts a day. So we're talking like extreme amounts of water getting wasted.
Because big breweries talk about the number of litres of water it takes to create 1 litre of beer, don't they?
Right.
Yeah. So,
and some are much better than others.
Yes, yep. definitely. So I, when I was doing my brewing certificates, I think 1.4 was the theoretical minimum that you could use. So 1.4 litres of water used for every litre produced. That was the theoretical minimum. I think the average was anywhere from 2.5 to 4 litres.
Wow.
But, yeah, we did some loose math when we worked there, and they were up around 10.
That's worse than almond milk.
So, knowing that we weren't going to be able to brew back-to-back and capitalize on that heated cooling water, we wanted some way of capturing it and reusing it. So we have a very large cool room, which is awesome, and we have a cold liquor tank inside the cool room. So what we do is we use that cold liquor to cool the brew before we cast into the fermenter, and then we capture that heated cooling water into our lauter tub, and then we let it sit overnight and it cools back down to ambient, and then we pump it from the lauter tub back into the cool room and it cools down to cooling temperature, and then a day later we're ready to brew again. So it works well for our system.
It's just like homebrewing where you've got one of your double cool heat exchange type business, counterflow chillers. It's a bit along those lines.
Yeah, so we just capture all the water we use and we just send it back to the cool room where it cools back down and it's ready to go for the next brew.
And so, does that become unusable after a period of time, that water?
Yeah, it definitely starts to get a bit skanky. We probably average around 15 brews before we dump, but we generally don't dump the whole lot. We'll generally dump about half of it and then top up with fresh. But every now and then the cold liquor tank will start to look a little scungy inside, so we'll just drain the whole lot, give everything a good scrub up, CIP, and then refill, go again.
That's pretty cool. So what's your water usage? Sorry, did you say before how many litres for every 1 litre of beer you're making?
We're probably averaging, we'd be close to the 2.5 to 3. I'd say we're definitely on the low side.
And for a small brewery where sometimes things aren't always as efficient, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, but we've got some fairly dedicated staff. We're all very sustainably and efficient minded. So, yep.
So you do separate your plastics and your glass then, I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. Separate everything.
What, are you fully solar or anything like that?
Yep. Yeah, we're fully solar.
Excellent.
I have an electric car. What else? Oh, yeah, at the moment we're just doing the growlers as well, so exponentially decreasing carbon footprint.
Oh, that's a good phrase, that
that's
one, isn't it?
That's a great phrase.
Oh, from Young Henry's brought that one
out. Yeah.
That's good. So the only way you can basically drink your beer is either in a glass at the brew pub or in these stainless steel growlers so you can control the footprint.
Run like a spot,
Yeah. So as I like saying to our customers, they're like, how come your beer's so good? Not, you know, bragging, but I was like, well, the secret ingredient is freshness and it's only travelled 10 metres and it
never gets warm, you know?
Yeah, it never gets warm, never goes far, and because we're so small, beers generally aren't more than about 4 weeks old before they run out.
Fresh is best, as they say, don't they?
Absolutely.
So tell us about your time in COVID. I mean, obviously you've got a cracking haircut because of it, but what else has changed? What else has changed with the business model? Because I'm not even sure how the Illawarra region was treated in terms of the New South Wales lockdowns. Were you guys?
We've had a Greater Sydney, luckily. Yeah. So
we're Greater Sydney.
Mm. Oh,
every time Sydney goes into lockdown,
we go into lockdown.
Oh shit, that sucks. Yeah. Okay. I thought you might be a bit further out, and you might have got away with it.
No, Shell Hard is a cut off.
Yeah, bugger. Oh, so okay, you've then had to pivot because of COVID. What have you been doing?
Well, the first lockdown, we pivoted pretty hard and fast. Within a week, we'd gone from a functioning brewery and tap room, or a bar basically, to a little hole in the wall takeaway store. We set up an online store and started doing some home deliveries as well, all in the first week of the first lockdown. And then there was about a month worth of teething problems. We finally started to dial it in. All of those things carried through after we opened up as a venue again.
Yeah, so we've got a proper website over the months that are following.
Yeah, like a real nice website now.
Yeah, apparently, that's for sure.
Yeah, has actual information on it.
Yeah.
And nice little pictures, drawings.
Yeah. So we run the takeaways, a little hole in the wall. With the swap and go growler fridge, so people just pop their empties on the table and then we grab a fresh one out of the fridge, so it's nice and easy, contactless. And then we run the deliveries as well, which is like the old school milk run. So people pop their empties outside, we swing through, the growlers are insulated so you can leave it on the doorstep. You've got 6 hours worth of cold beer before you run into any dramas. Just knock on the door, yell beer delivery and hear the woo from the inside.
I like that. I like that.
It's pretty fun, actually. People are stoked.
It's awesome. You know, like when I buy my new gas cylinder from the BP service station or whatever, and then I'm into the swap and go system. What's your initial startup price for getting involved in the swap and go system for you guys?
It's between $65 and $75, and that's for the beer and the vessel. The difference in price just generally is dependent on how many hops or how much alcohol there is.
And then refills, what, they're sort of like 30 or something?
Refills are $20 to $40.
Yep.
Again, depending on the size. So it's a little bit more to engage, but it's pretty much the closest you can get to drinking tap beer.
Yeah, I love the fact that you're putting in that effort. Like, it's obviously probably not the most cost-effective way to be spreading beer around, but it's like a beautiful hands-on thing that you're doing. And even though you can't talk to your customers because you're dumping and running, the idea is nice that maybe one day you will.
Yeah, it is. And it sort of ties in with our sustainable push and like our efficiency focus. Just was a natural fit, I guess, doing it this way.
It's also the only thing we could do given the setup that we've got. So you do what you can as well.
Yeah. It's not like you could have gone all into cans or anything like that. You don't have a canning machine, so you've just gone into
cans. We don't have the access on the site either.
Yeah, we filed a site audit for a canning line or for a mobile canning
line. What are you doing with that there?
It's terrible.
No one can see you.
I can see you.
Yeah, you guys don't count. On my head, all that matters.
That's it. So when people come to your brewery, there's so many things you could be talking about. Like, we've covered off on a lot of different stuff here tonight. What's your main point of focus? Are you sort of like environmental warriors that love the outdoors that happen to be brewing beer? Are you beer first, and then you try and work that environmental message into what you're doing? What's your pitch to a new person at the brewery?
I think we started off one way, and we've kind of, as we've grown, we've realized the potential of business, and we've sort of reevaluated what we're about and why we're about it.
It's not us on a little brew system that we designed anymore. It's much more of a business. So we sort of changed the focus. The environmental sustainability stuff is just with us from the start. That's just important to us. It's part of every decision.
If you can't be sustainable, you shouldn't be in business.
Oh, I like that. That's fair enough. And you obviously, you're practicing what you preach. I think I read somewhere about you guys actually making your own furniture as well, didn't you? From the farm.
Oh yeah.
When fitting out. So we built all the brewery ourselves. So a lot of the stuff in there was pallets that I pinched. I mean, acquired, legally, of course, from my old brewery.
It tends to happen, I believe.
A lot of the trimmings are the fence palings from Anna's grandparents' next door neighbor's house.
Yeah. There's some Oregon posts from my parents' old carport.
That's a table. It's a table now.
Yeah. There were posts, but yeah. And the bar, which is our most impressive piece of wood, is a big old pine tree that came down on my granddad's property. So we rough milled that and aged it for a couple of years, and then got these big massive slabs, and that's the bar. So. That's nice.
Beautiful stories. I love that. That's great. I feel like there's a lot more stories to be told for Rube Goldberg and the Brew Machine. What's the short title you give the brewery? Is it
our plan was, we're like, oh god, this is a mouthful, so this is going to be a big deal, right? But we're like, the locals will nickname it. Like, they'll come up with it. We don't need to force this. It'll
Rubies
come
or something, or
yeah.
They just call us the pub.
the Tara Brewery, or we do get Rubes.
Yeah, we get Rubes a bit. Rubes. We personally shorten it to RGBM.
But it's not that much.
That's not that short.
No, still so four syllables. Yeah.
Rubes.
Yeah. Rubes sounds good, I think. Maybe you need to start producing some T-shirts. If you knew an in-house artist that could design something, they could maybe design a T-shirt that's got a Rubes on there or something like that, just to prompt them.
So some of our locals, we've got some pretty strong.
Very invested locals.
Yeah, some very passionate locals. And so they always ask if they can, get like borrow our design and make up T-shirts of their own, like their own brewery shirts with our logo on it. The latest one is the Tarawannabees.
Tara Warnervet. I like yeah. that. Have yeah. any of your punters actually got the tattoo of Rube on
not
their?
It's been threatening for a long time.
I've got the actual Bruce system.
Yep.
But yeah, there's been a couple of people threatened, but I think they're all talk.
That'd have to be a beer for life type of thing, wouldn't it, if they got one of those, don't you reckon?
Nah.
Maybe just a free pint.
Maybe how many cats some people have.
Maybe
know?
A high like five. A
side note.
High five. Maybe a place
or something. Thanks for marking yourself up with my brand. Here's a high, nice high five for you. That's right. That'd be great. That's all they'd be after, I reckon.
Pretty Nothing much. Pretty much.
So is the future for Rubes going to be still small and bespoke? Like, have you got plans to still remain maybe hyper-local? But a bit
so we got plans, man. So we got all sorts plans. Of big ideas.
Yeah.
How long have you been operating for now?
Three and a half years.
Okay. So you've obviously outgrown your stainless storage.
A little bit COVID interrupted.
Yeah, half of that's in COVID.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it doesn't feel like 3.5 years.
Have you got more room for storage at the current site?
No, we're pretty much locked in. We do have off-site storage.
The original venue will stay pretty much as is.
Yep.
Yep.
So we always want that local pub vibe down in through there. You don't want to change that.
Yeah, the current venue was designed to
support itself.
So what I'm hearing... Now, I could be talking between the lines here, and we can cut this out if I let out your secret that I don't know anything about, but I'm reading there's going to be a secondary brewery somewhere, and that one day people outside of that area will get a can of this beer.
Big-ass production facility.
Go up against your old brewer employer, maybe?
No, very different business model to that.
No.
That's a rube love far and wide, though, anyway.
Yeah, so we've got our 5-year plan, 10-year plan, involves growth, but it just feels like two steps forward, one step back with all the COVID stuff at the moment. Every time we get some real momentum, it gets cut short. So we're still heading in the right direction, and we do have the rest of our lives
slowly but surely.
Yeah, we're not a rushy type of couple.
What do the kids think? Are they okay?
Me too.
The kids okay with you expanding and making them work harder?
I think fine. They've got plans to join us. Mm. So
nice.
We've certainly got plans for them as
well. Yeah, we do. We've been our plans. So hopefully we'll just keep them happy and
keep the family intact.
Mm. Yeah. Have you ever thought that by growing and doing that you might lose what makes you so awesome and so cool right now? That maybe it's got to be next step. Look, if you want to make this a serious business, I'm assuming that a 50,000-litre brew pub is never going to make you millionaires or might not even be interested in that. But by taking that next step and making that business a bit bigger, how are you going to take what makes Rubes so awesome and so amazing, those cool stories, into a bigger space and take that story farther and wider? Have you thought about that?
Well, that's something we've still got to negotiate with ourselves, I guess, but it is still like 5 years away, I reckon.
Yep.
So there's no rush, but I guess everything we've done has been fairly organic. We haven't really relied on too much sort of outside sort of influence. So I guess we'll just sort of do what we've always done and just...
I feel like we're being a bit cagey. We have many ideas of how it could and will work. But we haven't, they're not solidified yet because we're not ready to pull the trigger on any of them.
Fair enough. What if I said you had to come up with a core range if you went core like range. That? Is that like a dirty word to you?
Not really. I guess without labeling it that, we do have essentially a core range, ones that are almost never off tap.
Basically people get really pissed if we ever take them off
tap. There's a lot of blowback if they're not on tap, so.
People have their favorites.
And we appreciate that. We make sure that they're exactly the same each time. But so we have fun with the other stuff. But we had three, I guess.
Yeah, three or four.
Definitely two.
Two, three or four. What is it?
Well, there's the Kolsch.
Yep.
So that's always on, except when we run out occasionally. And then there's the Stash Red. Same deal. That's always on, except when we run out occasionally. There's usually a milk stout, but in summer we often switch that up for the Dunkles.
Mm.
And then there's styles that we always have, but not specific beers. So we'll always have like a hoppy lager. We'll always have a sour. So the in terms of our current venue, the tap list is very structured in its styles, but not so much as in like a core range, apart from pretty much those first ones.
You got to have a broad spectrum.
We kind of painted ourselves into a corner with that because when we first opened, we opened as a bar. And then we use the profits from the bar to fund the rest of the brewery build.
Yep.
So it was quite cool because we had, I think it was 6 or 7 taps at that stage. So we were just all the local breweries and beer that we thought was exciting and new, we would put them on tap. So we just it was just all guest taps. And we would mix it up every week because we'd only buy a keg of something. So each week there was a new tap list. But then when we started brewing our own beer, there was that expectation to always have a new tap list every week. Yeah. So that's why every week.
People kept telling us like, oh, we love, you know, every Wednesday when it comes out, I know it's hump day and I get to see what you've got. We're so excited. We're like, oh, people are reading them. Okay, we better keep that going.
We better keep doing it.
we had a similar thing at Batch where we started off and we were known for producing, you know, a new beer every single week, and then we were keeping track of how many beers that we produced, and then people just expect us to keep that pace up. And they didn't realize like how difficult it is to keep, you know, one beer every 10 days. I think we averaged and for the first couple of years, like to keep up that pace, even just to have the bloody ideas to fill those beers, it's really difficult.
Just managing all the stock required to produce those variety of beers as well.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Like they've got a numbers man like you behind this thing, eh?
Your mum's going to love that.
You're Rube's Rain Man is what you are.
There we go. I've not been called that before.
Rain Man. All right.
There you go. I mean that in a nice way. You got to have somebody to look after all the numbers and stuff because obviously Anna's only good with a pencil or to maybe do some physio and she's handling the nice soft stuff. You got to have someone that's got to look after those numbers.
Yeah, I definitely do the bulk of the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. She manages more than a pencil. But
I was trying to say she's the artistic side, but it didn't quite come out that way.
She manages me just fine.
Oh, yeah. I think I have a wife who manages me quite well as well. I think that's how it works in this house.
Doesn't it? You bring out your strengths.
The yin for the yang, that's how I always thought.
Exactly.
I'm in charge of important stuff in this house, like what music is being played and who makes the kids' lunches. And I think my wife is pretty much everything else, perhaps she's in charge of. We've had it working for 20 years, so it's going all right, I reckon.
Well, so. The system ain't broke. Don't fix it.
That's it.
Find your groove.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think you guys have certainly found your groove. I've really enjoyed the chat tonight. I think what you guys are doing is absolutely amazing. I do hope that 5-year plan happens a little bit quicker so that other people can find out more about your beers because what I've read, people are really enjoying them. Those are the ones that are lucky enough to live within 10 minutes of the brewery or whatever it is. Love your attention to detail. I love the fact that the two of you are in this together and, you know, as I said, yin for yang and achieving this together with your other two business partners, the kids, I should say. It's awesome. It's
just really
the brewers.
The workers.
Really, really nice story, and I'm so glad that you could come on here tonight and have a chat with me. So I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers to great beers.
Awesome.
Cheers to good beers.
See you, mate.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.